The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 454 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on the Grizz. The show is also free in the podcast section of iTunes, and you can follow me on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. I always look for your feedback there. I'm at TheSportsRPT on Twitter. Big show today coming up. My prediction for Super Bowl 51 in Houston. The big game is less than a week away. I'll get into my all-time quarterback rankings, need to vent a little bit, and also praise one national media member for providing perspective. Speaking of the best of all time, aka the GOAT, if you're a tennis fan, you had to be loving the Australian Open. True greatness was on display. And there's a new number one in college hoops. This team isn't from the ACC, SEC, Big East, Pac-12, Big 12. Nope, none of the above. It has been a wild season of college basketball. I'll tell you who is number one and run down some of the upsets from this weekend. Lots of fun topics to get to here on episode number 454 of the Sports Report podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're with you on GrizzlyProductions.tv every Monday. And of course, in the podcast section of iTunes, just type in The Sports Report, Paul Roberts, and the show will come right up. And again, whether you agree or disagree with my comments, feel free to weigh in on Twitter at TheSportsRP. We start with the Patriots and the Falcons, Super Bowl 51. Atlanta's the new kid on the block. Remember that band? Oh, boy. Oh, I don't want to go down that road. Oh, gee, my ears are going to start to bleed. New kids on the block. Not my cup of tea, to say the least. I was more into Guns N' Roses at that point, I think. But this is only the Falcons' second Super Bowl appearance. New England, on the other hand, has been here, done that. Tom Brady's in the Super Bowl for the seventh time, the most in NFL history. He's 4-2 in the big game. Vegas is saying that this is going to be another shootout. The total is 59, and I don't think that surprises a whole lot of people. Atlanta and Green Bay combined for 65 in the NFC Championship game. Patriots are favored by 3. It seems a little bit low to me, a little bit light, not much, just a little, especially because New England is such a public team with the track record of success, and Atlanta clearly is not. In fact, I read a story that there was more action on the Cleveland Browns to win the Super Bowl before the season than the Atlanta Falcons. I kid you not. True story, not an alternative fact. I thought New England would be favored by 4. It's at 3. We'll see if it changes at all before kickoff. I understand Atlanta's defense is playing much better now than they were at the beginning of the season. They held Green Bay to 21. They held Seattle to 20. But there are 4 rookies on that Falcons defense. 4 of them. And I know these young Bucks have played very well of late. However, now they're facing the maestro. Now they're facing the best of the best, the GOAT, the greatest of all time. And the Super Bowl can be overwhelming for some veteran players. I'm talking about 4 rookies for that Atlanta defense. And when everything's thrown on the table, when this game has been analyzed, reanalyzed, and then analyzed one more time after that, it still comes down to this for me. One team has Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and the other team doesn't. Period. And no disrespect to Matt Ryan and Dan Quinn. They deserve a boatload of praise. And I've said before, I think Ryan should be the MVP this season. But they're not Brady and Belichick. And in a big spot, and there's none bigger, I am not going to go against that duo. If I go down with my prediction, I'm going down with the best, the GOAT, the King of the Mountain. So I'm calling it New England 34, Atlanta 27. Patriots 34, Falcons 27. Let me know what you think on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT, and you can send me your predictions. A lot's being said about the Falcons' improved defense, but what about the Patriots' defense? Matt Patricia does not get enough credit, and I'm not talking about his beard, which even hockey players in the playoffs would envy. No, I'm talking about what the guy does, X's and O's. His defense allowed 250 points all season. That's 15.5 points per game. Houston was held to 16. Now, that's not a shock. We know about the Texans' offense. But then Pittsburgh managed just 17 points up at Foxborough, and one of those touchdowns came late in the AFC Championship game. And I know Le'Veon Bell was hurt, and he is definitely a difference maker, but they still had Big Ben, right? One of the top quarterbacks in the league. They still had Antonio Brown, one of the best wide receivers in the league, and they have a quality offensive line. They got 17 points. New England said, Antonio Brown isn't going to beat us. They put a blanket on him, and you would have to think that they're going to do the same against Julio Jones. Now, in that AFC Championship, New England said, Eli Rogers, you're going to have to beat us. And it was a smart move. You know, I'd put a corner up on Jones at the line of scrimmage, put a safety over top, and bracket him. You can't let him go nuts like he did against a bad Green Bay defense. And let's be real. Green Bay's secondary isn't great to begin with, let alone where they're banged up. And then for some reason, and I have no idea why, they were still playing him man-to-man, which was ludicrous. And he just lit them up like a doobie at a Grateful Dead show. Julio went for 180 yards, two scores on nine catches. Ryan threw for 392 and four touchdowns. I don't think that Belichick and Patricia are dumb enough to single cover Julio Jones. Now, Atlanta has other weapons. Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman, Mohamed Sanu, Taylor Gabriel. I mean, this is a high-flying group. They're fun to watch. They averaged nearly 34 points a game in the regular season. That was number one in the National Football League. I just believe that the Patriots' brain trust is going to be able to slow them down just enough. I don't think you're going to be able to totally shut them down. I mean, if you've seen this offense, I mean, this has been statistically one of the great offenses of all time. But I'm going New England, 34-27. I don't go against Brady and Belichick. And I know Brady's 39 years old. Any of these media bobbleheads that think this guy is done, give me a break. I mean, these guys should not have a microphone. They would not have a clue if Sherlock Holmes was standing next to him. I mean, it is ridiculous the way some of these people talk about Brady just because he's getting near 40. He's as good as he's ever been. His quarterback rating was 112. He had 28 touchdowns and two interceptions. Two. He completed 67% of his passes. That number, his quarterback rating, those are his second best all time. I mean, this guy is just getting better and better and better. He's aging like a fine wine. So I'm going 34-27 Patriots. I'm going to get your scores on Twitter. Again, I'm at the Sports RPT. iHome has introduced its Zenergy line of products, and I've talked about iHome for a long time. They've been a great supporter of this podcast. They feature sound and light therapy technology to help you fall asleep and wake up energized and ready to go, and that is something that is important to all of us. These new iHome products have soothing sounds from nature and white noise designed to help your mind and your body relax. They also include specially designed light therapy programs to promote sleep and increase your energy during the day. Dr. Michael Bruce, who is known as the sleep doctor, he's the guru. He recommends these new iHome products. He's the most trusted authority on sleep in the nation. So go to the website iHomeAudio.com. Take a look for yourself at the Zenergy line of products, like the bedside sleep therapy machine and the portable sleep therapy speaker. Of course, iHome is the number one brand in digital speakers. They have docking clock radios, they have headphones, they have earbuds, they have portable wireless speakers, they have it all. At the website iHomeAudio.com. Back on episode 454 of the Sports Report podcast. Thanks again for tuning in. Now, you often hear me rip the national media bobbleheads. Today, one time only offer here. May never happen again. But today, I'm giving one a standing ovation. And that is John Clayton of ESPN. Why? Because he did not become a prisoner of the moment during the playoffs. And this day and age of Twitter and Facebook and getting information instantly, often we as sports fans become prisoners of the moment. John Clayton did not. I try not to. So he ranked his top 15 quarterbacks of all time. The story was just posted today. And he has Aaron Rodgers at number 10. After the Packers beat the Cowboys in the divisional round, instant classic, I heard a lot of media bobbleheads saying that after Tom Brady, Rodgers is the best quarterback ever. Listen, he is a phenomenal talent. Unbelievable arm strength, can scramble. But number 2 all time? No way. No shot. Can't do it. Like myself, John Clayton has perspective. And we were not losing our minds over the Hail Mary against the Giants in the postseason and that performance at Dallas. Again, don't get me wrong here. Rodgers was brilliant. But when you're ranking quarterbacks, you have to evaluate the whole body of work, the complete resume. And Rodgers is only 33 years old. A lot of chapters still to be written. Down the line, he may climb up higher on the all-time list, but not yet. I put together my top 15 list in December of 2013, and you can go back and listen to that show. Sometimes we use it when we air a best of show. I made one change since then, and that's when Brady got his fourth Super Bowl ring, beating Seattle. That put Brady number one in my book. I had Montana number one. That put Brady ahead of Joe Montana. But I still have Montana number two. The guy was a perfect 4-0 in Super Bowls, and he was named MVP in three of the four Super Bowls he was in. He won two regular season MVPs, led the NFL in completion percentage 5 times. Peyton Manning is third on my list, as well as John Clayton's. We also both had Johnny Unitas number 4. So I'm looking at this list, and I respect John Clayton. I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I mean, 1 through 4, we had the exact same with Brady, Montana, Peyton Manning, and then Johnny Unitas. And I think what hurts Peyton now, again, we sometimes only remember what happened yesterday. People are remembering his final season and how the Broncos won the Super Bowl because of the defense and not Peyton. And that's accurate, but let's not forget all the great years this guy had. Peyton won a record 5 MVPs. won a couple Super Bowls. Johnny U won three NFL championships and a Super Bowl, plus three MVPs. So that's my Fab Four right there. Rodgers only has one Super Bowl. He is a two-time MVP. But there is no way that I'm putting Rodgers above Brady, Montana, Peyton, or Unitas. Can't do it. Now, after the top four, John Clayton and I disagree a little bit. Nothing too drastic. I put Brett Favre number five. He has him number seven. Favre won three MVPs. He has monster stats. Nearly 72,000 yards. More than 500 touchdown passes. Did throw out interceptions, too. I have Dan Marino number six. Clayton put him number eight. Does not have a Super Bowl ring, which hurts him. But you have to look at, you know, the teams that he was on as well. Sometimes we get a little carried away and only look at championships. John Stockton, Karl Malone never won an NBA title. Yet, you're talking about one of the best point guards and one of the best power forwards ever to play the game. Charles Barkley never won an NBA championship. So you can't just look at championships. So I have Marino number six. I thought he was one of the best pure passers of all time. Unreal arm. I mean, he was throwing laser beams out there. And then I shock a lot of people. At number seven, I have Steve Young. In the time that he played, he was outstanding. Doesn't have the longevity of others, but he won two MVPs. He won a Super Bowl. His quarterback rating is near 97. He also ran for 4,200 yards. I think he's underrated. Clayton has him at number 12. I probably have him a little bit high. Otto Graham, number eight for me. John Clayton put him at number five. Wow. Now, this is a guy you got to go back. I mean, 10 years from 1946 to 1955, he led Cleveland to the league championship game every single year for a decade. And he won seven titles, seven championships in 10 years. He won three MVPs. He was also a first-team All-Pro selection seven times. That is tied with Peyton Manning. And that's something that I really value. How many times are you a first-team All-Pro? Because that's telling me who are the best of the best. At number nine, I go John Elway. My friends kill me a lot for that. They think he should be higher. And he definitely could be. John Clayton had him at number six. My issues are this. Never led the league in touchdowns. Led the league in yards once, 1993. Completion percentage of 57%, which is not great at all for the best of the best here. And 0-3 in the Super Bowl before Terrell Davis came to Denver running back. And then all of a sudden, Elway's playoff record went from 7-7 to 14-7. Number 10, I have Drew Brees. John Clayton went with Terry Bradshaw, 9th, and Rodgers, 10th. Let me say this about Terry Bradshaw. And no, Mike Tomlin did not put me up to this. But I've always thought that Bradshaw is overrated. I mean, here's a guy, he has as many interceptions as touchdown passes. His completion percentage for his career is 52%. His quarterback rating, only 71. Now, he won four Super Bowls. He also was playing with the Steel Curtain. And look at the receivers he had with Stallworth and Swan, Franco Harris at running back. I mean, those Steeler teams were loaded. So I don't have Bradshaw as high as a lot of other people. My overall point is this. Too many media bobbleheads got caught up with the Hail Mary against the Giants and the unbelievable pass to Jared Cook on 3rd and 20 at Dallas. And they went overboard with Rodgers. He is awesome, but his resume is incomplete. You can't put him second or third all time. And that's what I was hearing last week. I mean, that is just nuts. You can't rank him higher than Brady, Montana, Peyton Manning, and Johnny Unitas, for sure. So at the very, very best, he's number five right now. And I would not put him over Marino, Elway, and Favre just yet. So I have him number eight tops. And that's not factoring in Otto Graham, who played in a much different era. If I count him, then Rodgers is number nine. Maybe you think I'm wrong. Maybe you think I'm off my rocker. Maybe you think John Clayton's wrong too, because he has Rodgers 10th. Or do we just have perspective as opposed to being a prisoner of the moment? Let me know what you think on Twitter. I think this is a fun debate to get into. Top quarterbacks of all time. Brady's got to be number one, right? And then I have Montana and Peyton and Unitas. That is my final four. And I don't put Rodgers ahead of any of those guys. I don't. Maybe you do. Let me know at the Sports RPT. Now, 5 years down the road, if he's still playing, you know, who knows? But as for now, I can't go that high. I've told you before that I just can't get into the Pro Bowl or the NHL All-Star Game for that matter. You know, like it or not, hitting is a big part of both football and hockey. And when you take that away, everything changes. It's not the same game anymore. I liked that the NFL brought back the skills competition to the Pro Bowl week, added dodgeball out there, which was funny to see. I did not see any wrenches being thrown. And if you've seen the movie Dodgeball, you know what I'm talking about there. I also like the move to go back to NFC versus AFC. The way they used to do it, drafting teams, it just confused me. You know, this way you know who's on the NFC, who's on the AFC. The other way, it was very difficult to figure out who's playing against who. And they moved it from Hawaii to Orlando, and they got a good crowd. They got nearly 61,000 fans. The ending of the game was exciting. Kirk Cousins of the Redskins got picked off by Lorenzo Alexander. He then pitched the ball to Aqib Talib, who almost scored, almost took it to the house. He was tracked down by Cousins there. AFC won the game 20-13. No touchdowns at all in the second half. Alexander, the linebacker from the Bills, and Travis Kelce, the tight end of the Chiefs, they were the offensive and defensive MVPs. Early on, I'm watching, and I saw an AFC running back get held up at the line of scrimmage. Not tackled. Nope, not tackled. Was not taken to the ground. He was still upright, and then finally the officials blew the whistle, and that was the end of the play. And that was about all I needed to see. You know, I'm hearing people say, well, it was a more competitive game. Maybe, but when I see that, that's just not football. It's not. As for the NHL All-Star Game, the Metropolitan Division, I still have trouble with that. The Metropolitan Division won it 4-3 over the Pacific Division. This is an odd format, hockey being hockey, where they have the divisions play each other. I do want to give a shout out to Wayne Simmons of the Philadelphia Flyers organization. I live about an hour from Philly. I've always cheered for the Flyers. And he had a hat trick in this game and was named MVP, which is pretty cool because Simmons is not your typical flashy all-star selection. I mean, he's a hard-working guy. He's tough. He's physical. He'll go to the front of the net. He'll take a pounding. So I felt good for Wayne Simmons. But again, without the hitting, it's not hockey. Your thoughts on the Pro Bowl and the NHL All-Star Game are welcome on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. Moving right along here on episode number 454 to something that I do love, and that's college basketball. I am a college hoops junkie, as you know, and we have a new number one. Not Kansas, not Kentucky, not Villanova, not any team from a power conference. It is Gonzaga. That's right. The Zags are 22-0. the last unbeaten team in Division One. They are number one for just the second time in school history. And if you look at their schedule, they got wins over Arizona. Arizona's ranked number five. St. Mary's is number 18. Florida's number 24 in this week's poll. Baylor's now number two. What a surprising season for Baylor. Kansas is number three. A big-time win for the Jayhawks at Kentucky. What a matchup that was Saturday night. 79-73 Jayhawks. Josh Jackson, 20 points, 10 rebounds. Kansas could not throw it in the ocean in the first half. And then all of a sudden, they're banging three after three after three in the second half to beat Kentucky. Villanova's number four. A nice comeback against Virginia on Sunday. Virginia just makes you grind it out. They are tough to play against. If you're a coach, youth level, junior high, high school, and you want to show your kids how to play defense, tell them to watch Virginia. I mean, you don't get anything easy. But Villanova won it on a tip-in at the buzzer. Louisville is number six. West Virginia, seventh. Kentucky, number eight. Virginia, number nine. And Wisconsin, 10th. That's a good Badgers club there. All you need to know about college basketball this year is that anyone can lose on any given night. That's what's gone on so far. If you've been glued to the NFL and the playoffs and haven't paid much attention to college basketball yet, that's the story. Parity reigns supreme. There was one night last week where three of the top four teams in the country all lost. On one night, they all lost. On Saturday, my alma mater, the Cuse, upset Florida State by 10. And, you know, I always say let the line lead the way. That was a fishy line. Syracuse was only like a two-point underdog, and Florida State was a top 10 team in the country. I mean, that team has some serious athletes. But when I saw that line was only two, I thought, oh, this is good for the Orange. And they pulled it out. Miami beat North Carolina by 15. Colorado shocked Oregon. Colorado is 2-7 in conference play, and they beat the Ducks. Georgetown defeated Butler. The Hoyas are only 12-10 this season. Georgia Tech, how dangerous is that squad? They knocked off Notre Dame by 2. Duke needed a last-second three-ball from Luke Kennard to get by Wake Forest 85-83. Kennard went for 34 in this game. He's a smooth left-handed player. 30 of them in the second half. 30 points in 20 minutes. That's incredible. And they needed all of it. And then on Sunday, Nebraska upsets Purdue by 3. And Nebraska's 10-11 this season. So there you go, upset after upset after upset. Honestly, there are probably 15 teams who could win it all this year. I'm serious about that. If you really wanted to make a case, you know, I was looking at the rankings today, probably 15 teams who could cut the nets down and win a national title. That's how much parity there is this season in college basketball, which makes it fun. And the tournament is going to be bonkers. You know, feel free to pick upsets because it's going to be wild. This is episode number 454 of the Sports Report podcast. Thanks again for tuning in. Paul Roberts with you on grizzlyproductions.tv. And of course, in the podcast section of iTunes. If you have a free second there, we really appreciate the 5-star reviews on iTunes. Finally, let's get to some tennis here. My brother played high school tennis, pretty good player. I used to play with him a lot growing up as a kid. And, you know, I didn't play at the high school level or anything like that, but just for fun, you know, just go hit some tennis balls around, good exercise, get outside. So I enjoyed it. Well, this weekend, what a treat. We saw four of the greatest players ever in the men's and the women's finals down in Melbourne. And if you like tennis, you can't ask for anything more. Roger Federer against Rafael Nadal. And Federer made his case yet again for the title of GOAT. Okay. the greatest of all time. He won a thriller on Sunday in the Australian Open final. He beat Nadal 6-4, 3-6, 6-1, 3-6, 6-3. Sets 2 through 4, but then the fifth set was unbelievable. Federer was down 3-1. He had the trainer coming out to look at him. I mean, even John McEnroe on the broadcast was talking about how unlikely it was going to be for Federer to come back. And what does he do? He rattles off 5 straight games and goes from 3-1 down in the final set to winning that set 6-3. And think about all this. The guy was out 6 months because of a knee injury. He's 35 years old. He had not won a Grand Slam singles title since Wimbledon 2012, almost 5 years ago. And he's going up against a guy, Nadal, who has got the better of him. I'll give you those numbers coming up in a bit. But now Federer has 18 major titles, 4 more than Nadal. Now, if this goes the other way, Federer has 17, Nadal has 15, and the Rafa fans are going to be screaming from the mountaintop that he's better than Federer. But now I think it's tough to make that argument when one guy has 18 majors and the other has 14. Federer is the 4th oldest Grand Slam winner ever. His trophy collection now includes 5 Australian Opens, 1 French, 7 Wimbledons, and 5 U.S. Opens. And Nadal was the 4th top 10 player that Federer beat in this tournament. I mean, that is impressive to beat 4 top 10 guys. And courtside seats were going for more than $25,000. For the first time, organizers open up the Margaret Court Arena, and they showed the match on the video screens there. Nearly 25,000 people attended the session. Ratings, I'm sure, were really, really good. But when you looked at this tournament beforehand, there wasn't much buzz at all for Nadal or Federer. Federer was the number 17 seed. That's right, number 17, and Nadal was number 9. And Nadal has had the better of this rivalry, 23-12 overall, and in Grand Slam matches, 9-3. Now, 5 of those 9 wins have come on clay, where Nadal clearly better than Federer. It was the 4th time that one of their Grand Slam finals went to 5 sets. I mean, this has been an epic rivalry. Federer is the first number 17 seed to win a Grand Slam since, you can probably guess this one, Pete Sampras, 2002 U.S. Open. Number 17 seed. He's off for 6 months. He's 35 years old. He's playing a guy who has really dominated him in Grand Slam events. He's down 3-1 in the final set, and he comes back to win. Incredible stuff. And on the women's side, Serena is now all alone at the top when it comes to Grand Slams in the Open era. She beat her sister Venus 6-4, 6-4 on Saturday. Serena wins her 23rd major, breaking the record that she had shared with Steffi Graf. She was frustrated early on. She smashed her racket. I mean, just crushed that thing. She had some double faults early, but eventually settled down, took control. It is her 7th Australian Open title. She also has 7 Wimbledon titles, 6 U.S. Open championships, and a mere 3 at the French. Got to pick it up there at Roland Garros. She is 35 now. She remains 1 Grand Slam behind the all-time leader. That is Margaret Court, who has 24 in the Open and amateur eras. Court, who is an Australian, won 13 majors before the Open era in 1968. So it's tough to compare, but she was there. She was at Rod Laver Arena applauding for Venus and Serena. So that was neat to see. Serena's back on top, number 1 in the world. Angelique Kerber had been number 1. She went out in the 4th round of this tournament. So Venus is 36. Serena's 35. Venus is a 7-time slam champion, and she was in the final of the Australian Open for the first time since 2003. That's 14 years ago, and I wasn't a math major either. And she was so gracious. Her post-match speech, wow. I mean, she gathered kids around to watch that. You know, talk about being a good winner and a good loser. Venus was just so gracious. How about this, by the way? Serena got a letter and a pair of shoes from who? How about MJ, Michael Jordan, number 23. I just got a pair of Jordans last week. Finally using up some of those Christmas gift cards. Love the gift card. Big proponent of the gift card. Because then you can pick and choose, get whatever you want. So I'm a big fan of the gift card. But I didn't get my Jordan straight from the man himself. This matchup, by the way, the oldest for a women's major final in the Open era. They're a combined 71 years, 11 months. Serena's the oldest slam winner in the Open era. 35 years, 124 days. She is now 17-11 against her sister all time and 7-2 against Venus in Grand Slam finals. So the younger sister definitely has had the better of this. It was 19 years ago that these sisters first played in Melbourne. Man, it's hard to believe that they've been around so long. I'm getting old. So Serena and Roger Federer both win. The GOATs, the greatest of all time. Fun weekend of tennis. Two great matchups. I hope you got to see that. So we talk football, quarterbacks, little Pro Bowl, NHL All-Star games, some college hoops, and we mix in some tennis. This has been episode number 454. I want those Super Bowl predictions. Who do you like? Maybe I'm wrong. I'm going Patriots here with Brady and Belichick. I mean, the best part of the Falcons this year has been who? Matt Ryan, right. Now, who's the best quarterback on the field? Tom Brady. I'm going with New England here. Should be a lot of points as well. But you can find me on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. And where would you rank Aaron Rodgers now that things have settled down a little bit? Where would you rank him on your list of the best quarterbacks of all time? Thanks again for tuning in. Have a great week, everybody, and enjoy the Super Bowl. I'll talk to you again next Monday. This has been episode number 454 of the Sports Report Podcast. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv.